Tonight, we have a panel discussion presented by the Institute for Human Sciences in cooperation with the Polish-American Networking Organization entitled The End of the Affair, New Europe and the United States. Our main speakers are Jonathan Schell, correspondent for The Nation magazine and Harold Willens Peace Fellow at The Nation Institute, and Adam Michnik, a leading journalist in Poland and former dissident. Introducing Schell and Michnik is Irina Grudzinska-Gross, Executive Director of the Institute for Human Sciences. Ms. Grudzinska-Gross.
Tonight, as usual, we are bringing two speakers who are from two places that are of interest to us. That is one who is from Europe and another one from the United States. And we have a third person, translator, that is Elżbieta Matynia. Maybe I should start with her. She is doing us a very big favor by translating one of the speakers. She's a professor at New School for Social Research, and she doesn't usually professionally translate. It's a labor of friendship, and she's so good that we asked her to come from New York. She is going to translate Adam Michnik, who many of you do know. He is now the editor-in-chief of Gazeta Wyborcza. He is one of the most well-known Polish dissidents and East European dissidents, a person who spent more than 6 years in prison and who wrote several books and influenced in a very decisive way the changes in Eastern Europe. The second speaker is Jonathan Schell, whom also many of you know very well. He is a writer, and he wrote for The New Yorker for many years, and he wrote very important books about Vietnam. What is very important about this meeting here is that both Adam Michnik and Jonathan Schell were representative voices of the generation. They both of them addressed the main issues that this generation was facing. Both of them, in a certain way, went against the established authority and in a very thoughtful and peaceful way tried to implement a change. Adam Michnik working on the regime change, if we can use today's expression, in Eastern Europe, and Jonathan Schell working against the war in Vietnam. Now, they collaborated also all throughout that period, and for me and for many people, they were the two representative voices that were in unison in a certain way, in very big friendship and in accord. And it was very reassuring to have people who grew up in such different situations, but nevertheless meeting on the basic issues. Now, there is a very big disagreement between the two of them. And this disagreement is also very meaningful. Adam Michnik supported the invasion, the war in Iraq. Intervention for the stabilization of Iraq. Imperialist attack. So, and we are going to ask him why, and maybe they are going to talk about it. And Jonathan Schell opposed it. So, and this is why we asked them to talk to us today about it. So please go ahead. The first will be Adam Michnik.
What I'm going to offer are really some musings on my own personal history with what is now called the New Europe, but that just recently was called Eastern Europe, and then for a little while, Central Europe. But first, I'm going to say a word about the Vietnam War, which Irina has already mentioned. So I really have a tale of three rebellions, one in Vietnam, one in Poland, and now the one in Iraq, and of the reactions to these in the United States and in Europe, old and new. Now, I experienced the rebellion in Vietnam firsthand. It happened by sort of accident. I'd spent a year in Japan after college, and I had a peculiar air ticket of the then-existing Pan-American Airways, now defunct, which somehow permitted me to stop anywhere I liked on the way back to New York. So I decided, it was late 1966, that I picked Saigon. And one thing led to another, and I found myself reporting on the war in Vietnam. And what was, I didn't know much about the war, frankly, but what was immediately apparent to me was that the war didn't make sense in its own terms. Military operations are always brutal, but in addition to that, there was a kind of senselessness to these proceedings, and that was visible in the actual events to me. And to put it just in one word, the American forces were destroying and thus estranging the very people they were supposed to be helping. And what was worse, there seemed to be no remedy for the problem. The people of Vietnam had been fighting for their independence for most of the century, if not longer, and they perceived the United States as a foreign occupier. There didn't seem to be anything that the United States could do about it. The North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong, however, were not liberal Democrats. They ran, and they still run, a one-party communist dictatorship. And the brutality of that regime was made clear after the war by the exodus of the boat people from their rule. Nevertheless, the longing for independence from foreign rule evidently triumphed any longing for domestic freedom that they might have had. And the United States, therefore, was unable to put together any kind of government in the South that enjoyed any detectable support from the local population. In a sense, as I later concluded, the war was lost before it began. For as soon as the United States left, the existing political forces in that country would take over, and that's just what happened. Now, I experienced the second rebellion, the one in Poland, now the new Europe, only vicariously. And as Irena has mentioned, I began to hear from her and other Polish friends in exile about a high school friend of theirs called Adam Michnik. And this was the beginning of my relationship with the New Europe. There were other names, Jacek Kudon, Leszek Kolakowski, Helena Wuchiwo. And they seemed to be involved in some sort of admirable but hopeless protest activities. To my surprise, the stories about the high school friends multiplied, and something called the Workers' Defense League, or KOR, appeared. Before I knew it, there was an immense movement, solidarity, and then an historical flood, which, to the world's astonishment, brought down the mighty Soviet Empire. So from my peculiar perspective, it seemed as if that brutal colossus had been brought down by the students in one class of a certain high school in Warsaw. As Irena mentioned, she invited me to write the introduction, which I was most proud and honored to do, to Adam's book of essays, Letters from Prison. And just permit me to just quote a couple of sentences from it, from that introduction. And this is about the new kind of political action that was invented by Adam and some others. In a sort of political and moral version of the hedonist's credo, carpe diem, the opposition proceeded directly and without postponement toward its goals. Its simple but radical guiding principle was to start doing the things you think should be done and to start being what you think society should become. Do you believe in freedom of speech? Then speak freely. Do you love the truth? Then tell it. Do you believe in an open society? Then act in the open. Do you believe in a decent and humane society? Then behave decently and humanely. In Michnik's words, in A New Evolutionism, quote, every act of defiance permits us to build right now the framework of democratic socialism, which should be not just a legal and institutional structure, but what is even more important, a real day-to-day community of free people. Now, the more I thought about my Vietnamese experiences and my vicarious Polish ones, the more I became fascinated with the differences from and similarities among them. Now, one obvious difference was, of course, that the Polish rebels, unlike the Vietnamese, were keenly interested in establishing a liberal democracy, and they did so. A one-party communist state of the kind represented by North Vietnam was the very last thing they wanted. It was what they had and wanted to get rid of. Another difference was also notable. The Vietnamese, having studied at the feet of Mao Zedong, were practitioners of people's war. The Polish rebellion, though not pacifist by conviction, was almost entirely nonviolent. Now, thinking later about all this and doing some reading in 20th century history, I drew some conclusions, and one of them again seemed obvious. The days of empire were over. Modern peoples did not want to be ruled by foreign powers. Thus, no country should or could seek to take responsibility for the political life of another. Modern peoples had found the means, whether violent or otherwise, of achieving their independence, which might or might not provide domestic liberty. Another conclusion was only a little less obvious. The old maxim that force is the final arbiter was no longer true in a wide range of situations. The mighty U.S. had been unable to prevail over little poor Vietnam. And who possessed more force than the Soviet Union, with its nuclear arsenals, the Red Army, the KGB, and all the other instruments of totalitarian coercion and bribery? Yet one fine day, it melted away like the morning dew, with almost no shots fired. If force wasn't the final arbiter in these instances, then what was? Something else, for which we have no good name. Call it popular will or politics, meaning local organization, or hearts and minds. Whatever it was enough to bring down all the empires of the 20th century, from the British to the Soviet, with the possible exception of the one we're sitting in right now. In Vietnam, I saw that superior American force was powerless without a political component. On the other hand, the Vietnamese, who had been politically successful, were the victors. In Poland, I saw that politics alone, virtually without violence, really entirely without violence, in the form of an immense movement, had the power to undo totalitarian rule from within. So I developed a profound dislike and suspicion of all imperial enterprises. I imagined that in this I was being a good American, remembering that this country was born in a rebellion against the greatest empire of its time, the British. In any case, this was one of the lessons I took from both Vietnam and the New Europe, though that name had not yet been invented. So you won't be surprised that I was horrified, as horrified as amazed, to see the United States adopt, under the Bush administration, what seemed to me a full-fledged imperial policy. You know what I'm talking about. I'll just name the key elements: a claim of absolute military dominance on a global scale, of a right to overthrow regimes at the sole discretion of the United States, so-called regime change, and to do so preemptively. As President Bush said, quote, "America has and intends to keep military strengths beyond challenge, thereby making the destabilizing arms races of other eras pointless and limiting rivalries to trade and other pursuits of peace." In other words, what he's saying here is the United States reserves to itself alone the entire military sphere and relegates other countries to these peaceful pursuits, perhaps going to this baseball game over here or surfing the internet or something. Not only that, but Polish troops are standing shoulder to shoulder with American troops in Iraq, of all places. Who in 1979, let's say, could have guessed? So that brings me back to Europe, new and old, and the United States. As you see, I took away the lesson that imperial ventures were a mistake. Democracy, I thought, I learned, was a domestic growth. It could not be imposed from without. It was, in its essence, anti-imperial. But on this matter, old and new Europe were, of course, divided. Old Europe, led by France and Germany, who were the chief architects of the semi-federalistic European Union, rebelled against this imperial enterprise of the United States, but many in the new Europe seemed to approve it. Moreover, it appears that my teachers, including Adam, but also Václav Havel and the Hungarian writer Georgi Konrad, heroes all to me, approved the new American policies, and especially the Iraq War. So now I found myself much more in agreement with cynical old Europe. I was inspired by the federalist policy, or quasi-federal policy, they inaugurated in Europe, and I was delighted that these old imperialists of bygone days had got out of that business and now disapproved of the American version of empire. I think they're right in believing that some kind of federal idea is the right alternative to empire, both in Europe and in the world at large. In conclusion, I'll just mention one rather large question that's on my mind. I'm wondering about the relationship of the collapse of totalitarianism, which was completed in Europe in 1989 or 91, depending on how you want to look at it, and what is going on now. Have we seen the collapse of the Soviet Empire only to see the rise of an American one? Imperialism, after all, is in the Western bloodstream. The most liberal European country, Great Britain, also possessed the largest empire, a very different empire, to be sure, from the Soviet, but an empire nevertheless. Let me quote from Hannah Arendt. She said, and this is back in the origins of totalitarianism in the 50s, "If it is true that the elements of totalitarianism can be found by retracing the history and analyzing the political implications of what we usually call the crisis of our century, then the conclusion is unavoidable that this crisis is no mere threat from the outside, no mere result of some aggressive foreign policy or of either Germany or Russia, and that it will no more disappear with the death of Stalin than it disappeared with the fall of Nazi Germany. It may even be that the true predicaments of our time will assume their authentic form, though not necessarily the cruelest, only when totalitarianism has become a thing of the past." Now, if Arendt is right that totalitarianism was a rib taken out of the rib cage of modern liberal civilization, then it's possible that new monstrous births can occur. I'm struck that as soon as the dominant Western civilization that had defeated the last of its great totalitarian rivals, as soon as it did that, its imperial instinct immediately awakened again. I'm worried about the tendency toward one-party rule in the United States. By the loss of the balance of power in favor of the executive, of the corruption of the political sphere by corporate money and power, and the erosion of civil liberties, the modern liberal West triumphed over the totalitarian regimes. Now the question is, who are we? What is this civilization? The crisis Arendt mentioned, I fear, is upon us. Thank you.
Chcę może zacząć od tego, że zgadzam się z opinią Hanny Arendt, którą cytował mój przyjaciel Jonathan.
Agreeing with Hannah Arendt, with her opinion, the opinion quoted here by my friend Jonathan Schell.
Ja też uważam, że diabeł pokusy totalitarnej istnieje w świecie demokracji.
I also believe that the temptation of the devil of totalitarianism exists in contemporary world.
Ja się tylko nie zgadzam z tym,
I only disagree with the notion that it exists only and exclusively in the United States of America.
Ja myślę, że bliżej,
I believe that much closer to the temptation of totalitarianisms are, for example, contemporary China,
Korea Północna,
Northern Korea,
Kuba,
Cuba,
i z całą pewnością,
and more certainly,
azjatyckie republiki.
The Asian stance, the post-Soviet republics of Central Asia. But if I would to say in which world this evil of temptation of totalitarianism feels the most comfortable,
to powiedziałbym, że w świecie, który nazywam islamofaszyzmem albo islamobolszewizmem, w tym świecie, który 11 września zaatakował Stany Zjednoczone Ameryki.
I would have said that this evil feels the most comfortable in the world of islamofascism or islamototalitarianism or islamobolszewizm in the world that on September 11 attacked the United States.
Zasadę przyjąłem kiedyś, żeby zawsze spojrzeć na świat.
Some time ago, I already accepted a rule, assumed that I need to look at the world through the lenses of my adversary, particularly if this adversary is a friend of mine, just as Jonathan Schell is.
Najpierw chcę powiedzieć, że bardzo wiele.
In the first place, I'd like to say that a lot of what he said from his observations, I consider them most creative and inspiring. What I disagree with him most is with his Americano-centrism.
Są dwa znane mi Americano-centryzmy.
There are two Americano-centrism that I knew about. I know about.
Reprezentuje George W. Bush.
One is represented by George W. Bush.
I on mówi, my Amerykanie jesteśmy najlepsi.
And he says, we Americans are the best.
A drugi reprezentuje Jonathan, który mówi, my Amerykanie jesteśmy najgorsi.
And the second one is represented by Jonathan, who says, we Americans are the worst.
Otóż ja się z tym nie zgadzam, aczkolwiek.
Well,
rozumiem,
I don't
Jonathana.
Agree with that, though I do understand Jonathan.
Dlatego, że mnie też znacznie bardziej niż wszystkie.
I understand that because the same situation is with me more than any other sins and mistakes. The most upsetting for me are the Polish sins and mistakes.
Podobnie jak Jonathan, ja w moim kraju niejednokrotnie oskarżany byłem.
And similarly as Jonathan, once I was accused in my own country that I'm a traitor of Poland.
Ja się całkowicie zgadzam z Jonathanem z tym, że imperium jest zawsze.
I completely agree with Jonathan that the empire is always something very dangerous and that one had to look very carefully at empire's hands.
Taka jest rola intelektualisty i Jonathan z tej roli się znakomicie.
This is the role of an intellectual and Jonathan is fantastically fulfilling this role.
Ja jednak uważam, że czasem trzeba spojrzeć na to nie z punktu widzenia amerykańskiego intelektualisty, tylko z punktu widzenia.
However, I still think that it might be good to look at the situation not from the point of view of an American intellectual, but from the point of view of a prisoner sitting in the Saddam Hussein prison in Baghdad.
Otóż z punktu widzenia lokatora takiego więzienia jest naprawdę wszystko jedno.
So from the point of view of a tenant of such a prison, it's really just the same whether he was freed from that prison upon the agreement of the Security Council or without that agreement of Security Council.
Jest rzeczą bardzo znamienną, że w tej debacie między Ameryką i Europą, między starą Europą i nową Europą.
Characteristically, in that great debate between the United States of America and Europe, between the old Europe and new Europe, there is a very visible absence, and that absence are Iraqi people, the people from Iraq. Nobody is asking him about anything. Nobody takes them into account. They are not there.
A myśmy w gazecie wyborczej złamali te zasady i myśmy
in Gazeta Wyborcza we actually broke this rule and we arranged a round table of journalists of both Polish and Iraqi journalists.
I to, co usłyszałem od naszych irakijskich
what I heard from our from our Iraqi friends, journalists who sat there with us was had one common theme.
Jeżeli dziś wyjdziecie z Iraku, to ten kraj
if you leave Iraq today, this country will turn into hell.
I teraz chciałem wrócić na chwilę.
And now I'd like to go back briefly to a Vietnam lesson.
Ja z tej lekcji wyciągam inne wnioski.
I'm drawing from this lesson different conclusions that Jonathan did.
Ja też uczestniczyłem w meetingach.
I also took part in rallies against the American intervention in Vietnam.
A potem uczestniczyłem w meetingach na rzecz boat people, tych Wietnamczyków, którzy na tratwach.
And then I was taking part in the rallies on behalf of the boat people, those people from Vietnam who were escaping in boats because they weren't able, they were not capable of living under the regime.
Muszę powiedzieć, że było mi wtedy wstyd.
I remember that I felt ashamed.
Dlatego, że miałem wrażenie, że swoją aktywność.
Because I had an impression that through my activity at that time.
Dałem wsparcie tym wszystkim.
I lent support to all of those.
Którzy Wietnamczyków zamknęli do więzień i obozów koncentracyjnych.
Who put Vietnamese into prisons or concentration camps.
I niedawno jakieś może. Pół roku temu,
and perhaps it was only half a year ago when
dostałem do redakcji list.
I received a letter. It came to the editorial board of Gazeta Wyborcza.
Od Wietnamczyka, który mieszka w Polsce.
From a Vietnamese man who lives in Poland.
Opowiedział mi.
He told me in the course of the three pages of typewritten letter his story.
Zapamiętam z tego takie zdanie, że najgłupsza z
Wietnamczyków. And I remember from that letter one sentence that the most stupid war that Vietnamese ever conducted was the one against Americans.
Za żadne zwycięstwo Wietnamczycy nie zapłacili tak strasznej ceny jak na zwycięstwo.
And also that was the most expensive victory for Vietnamese that they ever paid in a war.
I porównywał to z Koreą.
And he compared it to Korea.
I napisał mi, ile by dali moi rodacy, by móc dzisiaj żyć tak, jak.
And he said, how much would my compatriots give to live the lives as the South Koreans live today?
Ja chcę powiedzieć, że ja widzę wszystkie dwuznaczności.
I want to say that I see all ambiguities.
Of the
American intervention in Iraq.
Pierwsza dwuznaczność polega na tym,
the first ambiguity
że
is that
obalenie Saddama
to overthrow Saddam Hussein
wytworzyło pustkę,
created a vacuum,
w którą wtargnęły wszystkie te żywioły,
which was entered by all those by all those forces,
które dyktatura Saddama
that Saddam's dictatorship kept in prison.
I to byli w dużej mierze fundamentaliści islamscy.
And those were to a great extent Muslim fundamentalists.
I ci fundamentaliści chcą teraz sięgnąć po władzę.
And those are the people who want now reach for power.
Dwuznaczność druga jest taka.
The second ambiguity is the following.
Że w wojnie z Saddamem Husseinem.
That in the war with Saddam Hussein, the coalition found a very ambiguous allies.
Czy to będzie Arabia Saudyjska?
Whether it is Saudi Arabia?
Czy Uzbekistan?
Or Uzbekistan?
Nie są to z pewnością.
Those are not the most perfect democratic models to follow.
Koalicja antysaddamowska powinna
to follow by the anti-Saddam coalition.
I wreszcie.
And finally.
Można mieć istotne wątpliwości.
One could have real doubts.
Czy dzisiejsza polityka amerykańska w Iraku.
Whether current today's policy, American policy in Iraq,
jest rozumna i skuteczna.
Is reasonable and effective.
Bo przecież wiemy od Napoleona, że można.
Because we do know from Napoleon that one can win the war and lose the peace.
I to, co jest problemem numer jeden dzisiaj.
And what's the most important problem today, number one?
To nie jest jak wyjść jutro z Iraku.
It's not how to leave Iraq tomorrow.
I w tej materii jestem solidarny z opinią.
And as far as this is concerned, I'm in solidarity with the opinion of my government and my president.
I nie podzielam decyzji nowego hiszpańskiego rządu.
And I do not share the decision of the new Spanish government in this
Ale
matter.
Problemem jest, jak dzisiaj wygrać pokój.
But the issue, the problem is how to win the peace today.
I można mieć wątpliwość, czy administracja
One could doubt whether the American administration, which seemed to believe only in force,
ten pokój wygrać.
Whether this administration is capable of winning this peace.
Bagnetem można robić różne rzeczy.
You can do various things with bayonet.
Wygrywać wojny.
You can win a war.
Odstraszać wroga.
You can scare the enemy.
Ale na bagnecie nie można siedzieć.
But you cannot sit on bayonet.
Obawiam się, że prezydent Bush chce siedzieć na bagnecie.
I'm afraid that President Bush wants to sit on this bayonet.
Natomiast jednego fragmentu w rozumowaniu
There's one piece in Jonathan's argument that I cannot neither justify nor understand.
Opowiada się z wielką sympatią za tradycją.
He sympathizes and he talks with great sympathy about the tradition of solidarity movement, which rejected violence.
Ale przecież totalne zakwestionowanie polityki.
But the total questioning of the policies of those who are reaching for force and violence is to question, is to negate those who are rejecting violence. In Saddam Hussein's Iraq,
there was no space
for non-violence.
Dla zwolenników non-violence, Saddam
For the partisans of non-violence, Saddam Hussein had only one place, cemetery.
Ale w Iraku, administrowanym przez
But in Iraq, administered by Brenner, there is a space, place for non-violence.
Tymczasem Al-Sadr
At the same time, Al-Sadr rejects non-violence.
Al-Sadr sięga wyłącznie po przemoc.
Al-Sadr is reaching only for violence.
Te
Hundreds of Iraqi civilians dying, who are being killed every day, are not dying from the hand from American, Polish, or allies forces. Hence, they are being killed by the forces by the fundamentalist forces of terrorist organization of Al-Sadr. How do you think one can react vis-à-vis those people.
A jeśli tak, to może mieć pretensje do rządu
Should we feel similarly about the policies of Great Britain who did not want to give in to the Irish terror and did not who wanted to exchange the voting ballot with a bomb?
A może należałoby ustąpić przed Etarras, którzy przegrywają demokratyczne wybory i sięgają po terroryzm.
Or perhaps we should give in to Etarras who are doing a similar, proposing similar actions, reaching for terrorism.
Bardzo trudno jest oceniać działania wielkich
It is very difficult to judge the activities of huge powers exclusively in moral terms. And it's very easy to accuse them that under the noble rhetorics there are some economic or material, real material interests hidden.
Bardzo często obserwacje prawidłowe, dlatego że
Frequently those are really correct observations because it's very difficult to search, to look in a huge history, in a grand history, explanations which have only one cause. Why did Great Britain and United States enter into the Second World War?
Szlachetności czystej?
Because of nobility, pure nobility?
Dlatego, że chcieli bronić Polski?
Because they wanted to defend Poland?
No nie dlatego.
No,
swoich interesów. No.
They had their own interests.
Mieli prawo do tego.
And they had rights, a right to have those interests.
Ale obrona
But defense of one's own interests, which meant to enter into war with Hitler, deserved the acceptance of everybody
Otóż,
else.
Ja mam wrażenie,
I have an impression
że my sobie za słabo uświadamiamy, że naszej euroatlantyckiej cywilizacji wypowiedziano wojnę.
That we are not thinking hard enough. We are not thinking about the fact that our civilization, the Euro-Atlantic civilization, was just put in. It's facing the war. It was put in a situation of war.
Długi czas można było samo oszukiwać się, czy też tego nie widzieć. Ale
for a long time, one would,
perhaps
one could not have noticed it, but after September 11, it's very difficult not to notice
I
it anymore.
W tej wojnie
and in this war,
można popełniać błędy.
One can commit various mistakes.
I z pewnością amerykańska polityka popełniła wiele błędów.
And most certainly, American policy committed many mistakes.
Ale nie można mieć żadnej wątpliwości.
But one should not have
jaka jest natura tego konfliktu?
What's the nature of this conflict?
I teraz wracając do Europy.
And now getting back to Europe.
Ja proponuję, żeby w stosunku do przywódców europejskich stosować
I suggest that one should use the same criteria vis-à-vis the European leaders as one uses them vis-à-vis American leaders.
W Europie często słyszymy o amerykańskiej arogancji.
In Europe we often hear about American arrogance.
Że Rumsfeld jest arogancki, że Wolfowitz jest
Rumsfeld
butny.
Is very arrogant, the same about Wolfowitz.
No ale w porównaniu
But if you compare them
z prezydentem Chirakiem
to President Chirac
to są najbardziej skromni, grzeczni,
modest, polite,
wiktoriańskiej Anglii.
Pupils of Victorian England.
Dlaczego rozumieć i usprawiedliwiać to, co Francja zrobiła?
Why should we justify what France did in Africa?
I całkowicie odrzucać
and completely reject
argumenty,
the arguments,
które bronią polityki amerykańskiej na Bliskim Wschodzie.
Which are defending American policy in Middle East.
Nie ulega wątpliwości, że Jonathan ma rację.
There is no doubt that Jonathan is right
kiedy mówi,
when he says,
że Europa nie chce się godzić na unilateralizm.
That Europe does not Ameryka. Want to agree for American unilateralism.
Mówiąc nieco bardziej elegancko.
To put it more elegantly.
Ja powiedziałbym, że
I would say
Europa chce renegocjować.
Europe wants to renegotiate.
Zasady sojuszu z Ameryką.
The rule of alliance with United States of America. Which exist for the last 60 years.
Ja temu gotów jestem sprzyjać.
I'm friendly to this notion.
Pod warunkiem,
under the condition that
że Unia Europejska ma być mocnym,
that European Union is to be a strong, powerful pillar in the Euro-Atlantic Alliance and not a way or a mean to weaken
I
United States of America.
To, co dziś Europę dzieli,
what divides Europe today,
choć rzeczywiście sformułowanie
even though the Rumsfeld formulation for new, about new and new Europe, old Europe is senseless.
Europę na pewno dzieli
still, Europe is still divided as far as its relation to United States is concerned.
Są w Europie siły,
there are forces in Europe,
które mówią, że Ameryka z Europy powinna wyjść.
Which say that United States should leave Europe.
Ja nie wiem, czy jestem stara Europa,
I don't know whether it's old Europe
Europa,
or new Europe.
Ale ja jestem tym pomysłom przeciwny.
But I'm against this idea.
Ja uważam, że
I believe and I'm sure that the American presence in Europe after 1945, that this presence was entirely and exclusively positive.
Po pomysły, one być może nawet w Ameryce znajdą dobre przyjęcie.
The ideas about America leaving Europe might be even greeted with enthusiasm here in the United States. After all, the ideas of isolationism are nothing new here, but they are not going to be
no
good.
I drugi jest spór.
And there is a second conflict.
Unia Europejska.
Concerning the very nature of European Union.
Czy to jest obszar kompromisu?
What is European Union? Is this a space for a compromise?
Czy
of a compromise?
Jest piłkarska drużyna.
Or whether this is a soccer team.
Która ma dwóch kapitanów.
Which has two captains.
Francuza i Niemca.
One French and one German.
Czy rzeczywiście Unia polega na tym, że cokolwiek
whether the European Union means that whatever is decided either in Paris or in Berlin is totally obligatory for the rest of the Union. I believe that Europe, United States and the entire world is entering a very dangerous curve.
Poruszać bardzo ostrożnie.
And one has to move very carefully.
Trzeba szukać tego, co łączy kraje demokratyczne, a nie tego, co dzieli.
One has to search for what brings together those democratic countries and not what divides them.
Wszystkim reżimom demokratycznym trzeba spoglądać na palce.
All democratic regimes have to be very carefully watched.
I dotyczy to
and this is not talking here
Busha.
Only about the administration of President Bush.
Gdyby Jonathan był Francuzem, to byłby głównie zatroskany.
Would Jonathan be a Frenchman, he would be clearly very concerned with the level of corruption of the political class in France.
A gdyby był Włochem,
would he be Italian?
To z całą pewnością
most certainly he would try to convince us that
że w porównaniu z apetytami premiera Berlusconiego.
That in comparison with the appetites of Prime Minister Berlusconi.
George W. Bush w ogóle nie jest mięsożerny.
George W. Bush does not eat any meat. He's purely vegetarian.
Nie powiem, co by mówił Jonathan, gdyby był Polakiem.
And I don't even want to mention what would he say, would he be a Pole.
Bo mam wiele sympatii do mojej ojczyzny heroicznej męczeńskiej.
Because
dziękuję
I have
Państwu
a lot of
uwagę.
Sympathy to my heroic Poland.
Well, so much to say, so much to respond to. Let me just pick a couple of points. First of all, we're not engaged in a popularity contest here. I don't mean between him and me, but I mean as I would hesitate to enter into such a contest. No, I mean in regard to countries. The question here isn't which country is the worst and which is the best. I spoke about the United States. Of course, let me say immediately that, China, North Korea, the list of countries that Adam mentioned have political systems that I deeply dislike and detest. And in fact, my point about that is that I am really an American conservative. I consider myself in a certain sense to be an American conservative who seeks to hold on to the tradition of liberty, democracy, and very important for me, the anti-imperial tradition in this country. So the question isn't which country is better or worse. The question for me in regard to the United States is, what is the direction that this country has taken? And I'm very deeply worried about that. What I do see in the United States is a fantastic concentration of power that has gathered around the executive branch. We have one party that is in charge of all three, and some would say all four branches of government, if you want to count the press in that. If you look at what the communists used to call the commanding heights of society. Again, you see a concentration of power. In other words, not at the formal level of government, but at the actual level of the economy, and for that matter, the military too. So when you're looking for sources of opposition, whether formally in the governmental sense or socially, they're looking rather threadbare and rather thin. And this disturbs me deeply. And it's in this context that I see the war in Iraq and the unilateral policies that I have called preemptive. To me, it is a fantastic and amazing fact that the idea of American imperialism, which used to be flung at the American government by the left wing exclusively as a term of abuse, has now become a term of approval on the right. This is an amazing shift in American opinion. Of course, the regime, the Bush administration, doesn't use this language, but many of its supporters do use it, and I think it's a justified term. To me, a very, very essential and basic question is, what can you accomplish and what can you not? And what should you accomplish and what should you not with force in this world? It's a question that doesn't arise for Germany and France because they do not have as much military power as the next 20 countries put together as the United States was. It's a question that does arise uniquely for the United States, and just because of the factual case of what this country is, not because of America's centrism on my part, just a fact of life. Should the United States roam about the world overthrowing governments that are dictatorial? There'll be a very long list if we embark on that venture. My point is that as in Vietnam, so it seems to me in Iraq, and here you just have to make a judgment, that we have embarked on a project that we cannot finish. I say cannot finish. How long should we have stayed in Vietnam? 3 million were killed. We were there for more than a decade, about 14, 15 years, depending on how you count it. Would we have saved the boat people by staying another 15 years? No, we would have killed another 3 million and the result would have been the same. And I think we have to seek to understand that phenomenon. And I think the root of it lies in what I was trying to describe very briefly in my talk, which is that it seems to be a fact of life. It may not be a pretty fact of life. It may be desirable or undesirable that countries make up their own minds about their political futures. You cannot step in from outside, it seems, in our world. You used to be able to do it, but now you can't do it. And if you try, you will visit violence on that people, as we are doing right now in Najaf and Fallujah. Incredible quantities of violence, and you will bring yourself no closer to the glorious dreams of liberty and democracy that we all believe in, but that shouldn't become excuses for brutal and futile policies that can't help either ourselves or the people in the countries we intervene in.
Very briefly. So we would not repeat our argument.
Można na bagnetach przynieść wolność. Można.
One can bring freedom.
Tak się
on bayonets. That's what happened in Nazi
Włoszech
Germany,
faszystowskich,
in fascist
w Japonii Italy, tak się stało.
In Japan.
Mógłbym wymieniać jeszcze. Nie można
one cannot introduce
demokracji.
An established democracy by using
ale na razie my nie mówimy o demokracji w Iraku.
But we are still not talking about democracy in Iraq.
Tylko mówimy o wojnie rozpętanej przez skrajnych fundamentalistów,
radical extreme fundamentalists,
who chcą sięgnąć po władzę,
who want to reach for power,
by narzucić Irakowi totalitarny reżim.
In order to impose in Iraq totalitarian regime.
Ja potrafię zrozumieć argument.
I'm capable of understanding an argument.
Nie jest na naszą sprawą troszczyć się o to, by Irakijczykom nie narzucano totalitarnego reżimu.
This is not our business to care about not imposing the regime on Iraqi people, totalitarian regime on Iraqi people.
Ale powtórzę to, co usłyszałem
but let me repeat
od swoich irakijskich rozmówców.
What I've heard from my from people from Iraq, whom we hosted at Gazeta Wyborcza.
Nie zostawiajcie nas w łapach tych
bandytów. Don't leave us in the hands of those bandits.
I teraz jest spór z Jonathanem.
So and here is a controversy with Jonathan.
Zostawić ich w łapach tych bandytów?
Should we leave them in the hands of the bandits?
Czy pomagać?
Or should we help them?
Czy gdyby Ameryka wygrała wojnę w Wietnamie?
Would America
by byli
win the war in Vietnam?
The boat people. Nie, nie byłoby.
Would the boat people be around? Or no, they would not have happened.
Z krajów, gdzie Ameryka wygrała.
From those countries that America, where America won the war, nobody escapes on the.
Czy z tego wynika, że trzeba we wszystkim bić Bushowi brawo? Nie, nie wynika.
Does it mean that we have to applaud Bush in everything? No, absolutely not. That's not.
Tylko słowo imperializm.
But the very word imperialism has many meanings.
Zawsze status imperium jest niebezpieczny.
And the status of an empire is always a dangerous one.
Ale jeżeli prezydent Bush
If President Bush thinks today that America can rule the entire world, he is mistaken.
Jeżeli Jonathan
and if Jonathan
się obawia, że Ameryka będzie rządziła całym światem, to też się myli.
That if Jonathan is afraid that America will rule the entire world, he's also mistaken. There is no such a chance.
Ameryka nie będzie rządziła Chinami.
America is not going to rule China.
I nie będzie rządziła Indią.
Indias.
I nie będzie rządziła
and America is not going to rule European Union. And
it
would not rule
Russia.
So I want to quiet Jonathan down.
Bush może mieć
no chance.
Bush might have an appetite as a shark, but he's not going to rule.
Czy natomiast Ameryka powinna obalać wszystkie reżimy, które na to zasługują? Ja sympatyzuję z taką ideą.
There is a question whether America should overthrow all regimes which deserve it. I'm actually very sympathetic to this idea.
Ja wiem, że to nie jest możliwe.
And I know that's not really possible.
Ale jeżeli już jakiś totalitarny reżim Ameryka.
But if there is a totalitarian regime that America decides to overthrow, of course I'm going to sympathize.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a panel discussion presented by the Institute for Human Sciences in cooperation with the Polish-American Networking Organization, entitled The End of the Affair, New Europe and the United States. Our main speakers were Jonathan Schell, correspondent for The Nation magazine, and Adam Michnik, a leading journalist in Poland and former dissident. For a CD or cassette of Boston University's World of Ideas, call 1-800-909-9287. CDs and cassettes are $15, which includes shipping and handling. Tonight's program was produced by Michael Garth and Matt Odette. I'm Gina Cervetti.